Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
It's midweek, Wednesday, April 17, 2024 is the date. Welcome in. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, Gabe Kuhn. Former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer, as I always am, of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That would be Connor Dunning at CDunning929. Connor, did you like the Warriors bowing out early?
Oh, of course.
Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it.
I'll explain it in a little bit. I half enjoyed it. It was interesting. I thought I'd enjoy it more. It was weird. I had some mixed feelings on the entire thing. But we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. It is a Wednesday, so we're going to open on overreaction and not an overreaction. We'll talk about the Warriors. We'll talk a little Grizzlies as well along the way. We have Memphis's out-of-conference schedule. Two more opponents were announced today, home and homes, Mississippi State and Ole Miss. How about that? We'll go through what that schedule looks like now, but it is a gauntlet. It is honestly ridiculous when you look at it top to bottom with the Maui Invitational and Ole Miss and Mississippi State and Virginia. It just does not end. It's unbelievable to see what the athletic department, Penny Hardaway, what they're cooking up over there as far as the out-of-conference schedule is concerned. Now, as far as guests, we're loaded today. We're absolutely loaded. 5 o'clock, as normal, to start hour two, we'll have Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show. 5:30, we have our weekly Showboats guest on a Wednesday. It'll be safety Jerry Elder. He's coming off of a 7-tackle performance. Now, they did not bode well last week. They lost 33-14, but he had a good game. And he has an interesting story. I mean, he did not go anywhere big for college. He went to, have you ever heard of Westchester University?
No.
See?
Can't say
I have.
It'll
be interesting to talk to him about that, but he's made a nice little career for himself in professional football coming out of Westchester University. So Jerry will join at 5:30. And then 6 o'clock, radio voice of the Grizz. You hear him on 92.9 during the season. That would be Eric Hasseltine. He'll join, and he has a little bit of fundraising for a baseball team that he needs to bring up as well that he helps support. It's his kid's team. So we'll throw that to him and then also talk a bunch of Grizzlies, talk the Warriors, are they done, that type of thing. The Blitz will be at 6:30, and we have some Colorado news to talk about as Shiloh Sanders is apparently the director of recruiting now at Colorado, and he does it via Instagram. That's interesting. And then the Cowboys. I know it feels like I'm piling on the Cowboys, Connor, but it's kind of easy to. And I think Cowboys fans are piling on the Cowboys. This has been a terrible offseason, but they signed a running back yesterday. It ain't a big name. I'll tell you that much. It is not a big name by any stretch of the imagination. But you know how we open every single Wednesday. That's with overreaction, not an overreaction. Connor, hit it.
Now, it's overreaction or not an overreaction.
We are the Wild and Crazy Guys.
That's crazy.
Chill, homie.
On the Gabe Kuhn Show from 92.9.
All right, Gabe, Warriors lost to the Kings and are kicked out of the postseason. Ha ha ha! They lost 118-94 and got absolutely cooked. Cooked last night. They had no answers. It's officially over for the dynasty that was the Golden State Warriors. Overreaction or not an overreaction?
Not an overreaction. And I'll tell you how I feel about it in a second. But I think the biggest tragedy in why this ended is the Warriors never really looked forward, right? Whether it was Steve Kerr or the people in the front office, they never decided to focus on development. It felt like if it wasn't Steph Curry, Klay Thompson or Draymond Green doing it and winning championships, it felt like it wasn't worth it by the end. That, like, it reminds me of older folks, right? Like, we can talk about this because we're millennials and we were told to live a certain way coming up. You get some older folks saying, we've always done it this way. Go to college, get a good paying job, go buy a house, have some kids, retire early. And they're not knowing that, you know, college and houses have tripled in value while wages have stayed the same and it's a saturated workforce and it's hard to get a job. But as time passes, you have to evolve. You have to change. And I don't think the Warriors ever took it upon themselves to do that. Now, James Wiseman may have been a miss, but I still am of the opinion there was something there, but they never really gave him an opportunity. Moses Moody, it took way too long for him to get a opportunity. He's a great defensive player. I know that he has some athletic limitations, but they finally got to playing him at some point. And then Jonathan Kuminga, I mean, during this year, he said he had lost faith in Steve Kerr and the Warriors. Then they started playing him, and look what happened. He became probably their second-best offensive player. Like, that's what happened with him, but it took way too long to actually get him in there. And everyone saw it, seemingly, except for Steve Kerr. They never wanted to focus on the young guys. And I get when you have a good thing going and you've won all these championships with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green, it's hard to, like, buck that trend. It's hard to move away from that. But you do have to understand, when they get into their 30s, when they get into their mid-30s, you have to start thinking about other plans. You have to think about sustainability, and they never really did that. And that's sort of the frustrating reality of where they're at right now. Now, on a larger scale, I thought last night would be really fun to watch. And part of me did enjoy watching the Warriors flail around and the rain being over. But part of me, it just wasn't. It wasn't as enjoyable as I thought. Like, all dynasties come to an end, but this one was emphatic, you know? Like, the Kings ran circles around them. The Warriors had no chance last night. And the truth of the matter is, I don't like Draymond Green. I don't necessarily like the Warriors. I don't like the code-breaking stuff, and I may be the only person in Memphis who has this opinion, but they did change the game. The 2010s, most of the 2010s was defined by them. Four championships, everyone began chasing their style, and all of that stuff is still there. Three-point ball, space, off-ball movement, defense, all that stuff is sort of the key to winning championships these days. And I'll relate this to Memphis in a way. Like, it's like watching Colonel Tom Parker die. Right? Like, the Elvis's manager. We know that there's, like, a lot of heartache there. Elvis, a lot of people blame Colonel Tom Parker and the, you know, Vegas and going out there and having a show every night and the stress that was put on his body. A lot of people blame him for Elvis's death. And it may have led to an early death, how much he pushed him. But without him, without Colonel Tom Parker taking over and bringing Elvis's music mainstream, would it be as timeless as it is, the music? Would it be recognized? Like, when you look at what the Warriors have been able to do, they've changed the game, just like Colonel Tom Parker helped change music, helped change rock music. But there's still, like, this thing in your head where there's a little bit of a mental block where you're frustrated, you have a lot of heartache, you have a lot of bad feelings toward the Warriors, Colonel Tom Parker, whatever it is. Now, last night's game, Keegan Murray, that was masterclass. That was beautiful, right? I mean, that was phenomenal. He didn't miss it, felt like. He ended up 32 points, 10 for 20 from the field, 8 for 13 from three. I thought Mike Brown, and obviously he's a former assistant for Steve Kerr, I thought it was a masterclass for him as well. Unreal defense on Steph, ran a double team at him the entire time, and they had no answers for it. But, you know, with Steph, and Steph didn't have, like, the greatest game because everything was running at him and the Kings were focusing their defense at him. In the past, who's been there to pick up when Steph doesn't have it? Klay Thompson. That was horrible. That was absolutely miserable. 0 for 10 from the field, 0 points, 0 for 6 from 3, and 31 minutes, a smooth 31 minutes. He gave them absolutely nothing. And he got cooked on the defensive end as well. And I think the real question for me now, and why I really think it's over for them, is, like I said, it's been Steph, Klay, Dre this entire time. Is there any real possibility that Klay can be a Warrior after that performance? Like, is there any way that the Warriors sign him to the amount of money he feels like he's owed? Will he take a pay cut? I guess we'll see if he wants to stay out there with them. But even if he comes back, he's not the same player. I think last night shows that. But is it possible for him to be a Warrior after that? I saw Mark Spears was reporting on what Steve Kerr had to say, and he said, we need Klay back. He still has good years left, and I speak for everyone. We want him back. Are you speaking for everyone? I can't imagine Warriors fans really care to see him back. I bet they want to move into the future with, you know, Steph and Draymond, because Klay's not the same guy. I just don't know if there's a possibility Klay is going to return. And it's been very clear, I think Shams has reported, and Woj as well, that he's going to test the free agent market. It really is an end of an era, though, Connor. Very much an end of an era.
It is definitely an end of an era. I, to be honest with you, enjoyed the entire time. I enjoyed it the entire time. The Kings whooped them. I loved it. Keon Ellis, what a game he had last night on the defensive end of the basketball. The biggest thing that I took away from it when I was watching it was that the Kings were very, very physical with the Warriors, and it did not seem like they were ready to play that ball game. You know, at the very beginning, it felt like Draymond was trying to, you know, establish himself within the game, and Sabonis just kept throwing those bows into his ribs and hitting him over and over and over again. And at some point, Sabonis got a black eye. I don't know when that happened. But it was a really physical basketball game.
No, that was before the game. I mean,
I guess I only noticed it like halfway through the first. I thought that maybe he and Draymond got into it and an elbow got thrown or something like that. But overall, I enjoyed the end of the Warriors dynasty very much. And they are in an odd position right now because they are a team full of veterans and then really young players. They don't really have anybody in the middle other than Andrew Wiggins, and I'm not really sure what Andrew Wiggins is anymore. When it comes to Klay Thompson, I do think that there's a possibility that he comes back for the Warriors, but it is going to have to be on a significant pay cut.
Yes.
Because the irony of last night's game is that it's like his worst game in 2 months. He's actually been playing pretty damn well down the stretch, and then last night he just completely disappeared in the moment where the Warriors needed him the most. So I do think that it's possible he comes back. There's a lot of rumors that a team like the Orlando Magic are interested in him, but here's what I will say to the Magic. You have a good thing going right now. You don't need to give Klay Thompson a ton of money. If you want Klay Thompson's services, sure, that makes a little bit of sense. He can be a veteran, help your three-point shooting. I get that.
Don't throw him ridiculous money.
Do not give him a lot of money. I like the idea of him on Orlando, but not with a big paycheck. I don't know what the Warriors are going to do. They are kind of stuck in purgatory right now because Steph Curry, I still think, has a few years left in him. Draymond, though, it feels like it's definitely starting to come to an end. Klay Thompson definitely feels like it's starting to come to an end. Are they going to give the keys over to Kuminga, Lester, Moody, you know, Pods, and then Saric didn't even play last night, and then you have to make a decision about Chris Paul, who I think I texted you this last night, like, Chris Paul's probably going to retire? Probably?
He said he won't.
He needs to. I think he needs to. Let's be honest, it was kind of tough watching Chris Paul, and he didn't have it much last night. They were attacking him when he was on the defensive end. They were just going after him over and over and over again. He wasn't able to keep up with De'Aaron Fox at all. Keegan Murray was shooting all over him. You know, one thing that I did take away from last night's game, too, is I'm a little disappointed that this Kings team doesn't have a real shot to win it all, because they're a ton of fun, and their fans are a lot of fun. It reminded me last night watching them, it did remind me a bit of the G&G Grizzlies a little bit, like how physical they were, you know, the types of players that they have. They, of course, have more three-point shooting than that team had, but the connection that they have with the city and how it felt in the building and kind of the underdog story, nobody believes in us. I don't know, like they reminded me of the G&G Grizz, and I found myself thinking, man, I wish this team had more of a shot to win it all, because they're going to be fun and plucky in the playoffs, but they just don't really have much of a shot.
You talked about the physicality, and you brought up they have no answer for Sabonis and Draymond. He was fine last night, but again, no answer for Sabonis inside. Those two guards for the Kings, Keon Ellis and De'Aaron Fox, they brought it on the defensive end.
Dude, Keon Ellis has been really good this year.
They terrorized Klay and Steph the entire night. They were awesome.
Well, and then Keegan Murray was the point guy guarding Steph in the first quarter, at least second quarter. And then every time they would switch, it'd just be a long guard in front of them.
Yeah,
they just didn't have no idea what
Keon
to do.
Keon Ellis, three steals and three blocks last night. De'Aaron Fox had the two steals. But Keon Ellis was everywhere last night. He was undeniable last night.
Harrison Barnes, a sneaky, really good game.
Was it strange though? Like the mistakes I saw the Warriors make throughout this reign of terror, I guess we could call it this dynasty. They made some mistakes last night that I'd never have seen.
16 turnovers. That's 16 a lot.
And then, like, was it 8 minutes left? Draymond's chasing a rebound and steps on the out-of-bounds line and mm-hmm. gives the ball back to the Kings. Obviously, they didn't come through, but that's a meaningful play in a game. And then, you know, Steph Curry getting chased by a double team and stepping on the sideline. Like, Steph, like, he looked human. He looked so human.
Can we just be honest about Steph last night? He didn't care. I don't think he cared. He knows his team didn't have a shot to win.
He knows his team didn't have a shot in the playoffs. I just thought he got. I mean, Mike Brown, what they did to him, everything had to be on Steph's shoulders.
Maybe.
And Mike Brown was not going
to
let it happen.
He didn't seem super locked into me. He just didn't. In the first quarter, they kept showing him on the bench, and he was kind of just looking around and talking. I don't know. He didn't seem locked in.
How frustrating would it have been to be Steph Curry? Last night, don't care, bro.
You've had the best team for a decade. I'm sorry. I don't have any room for Steph's
I'm just
tears.
Trying to tell you. I'm just saying it was frustrating to be Steph Curry last night with all the doubles every single time he came down the floor. He got beat to hell. He got beat to absolute hell.
Welcome to everybody else's life for a decade when you've had Clay, Draymond, and Kevin Durant.
I do agree with the fact that, like, Steve Kerr has talked about, like, he bears way too much for that Warriors franchise. He really does. He has to take on everything at this point with Clay the way he was the past few years, Draymond getting kicked out. Like, when Draymond honestly sort of ruined their chances to get a protected seed this year with how many games he had to miss. That's a problem.
Maybe so. Yes, probably so. Because when he was out, they were terrible.
They were. And then they make this run when he comes back, and they're really good.
Like, oh, the Warriors are back. It's because they have a full team.
But it's like, dude, and Draymond is probably the biggest issue with the way this thing went this year. They probably wouldn't have had to play in this type of situation. They wouldn't have been the 10th
seed. They just weren't locked in as a team. It just felt like they weren't very locked in and focused.
Yeah.
And they need to make a decision, because I think that Kuminga needs to be
highlight.
Probably their second guy moving forward.
Yeah,
it should be
sure.
Steph and then Kuminga.
For sure. The other play-in game, let's be honest, the Kings-Warriors game as a game, if you're not watching
first quarter was cool.
If you're not watching like for the Warriors to just die, like that's what everybody was watching for, if you're not watching it for that game stunk. It wasn't close. It was never really close in the second half. Pelicans-Lakers was phenomenal.
It was awesome.
110-106 Lakers. It'll be Lakers-Nuggets in the first round. Maybe we know the Nuggets swept the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, and Anthony Davis has talked a little trash after that, saying, we want to see him again. Okay, you know, be careful what you wish for. But really what that came down to, dumb shots by the Pelicans. Really early in the shot clock, they tried to get a bunch of transition threes. And then I think it was just also tough luck with the Zion injury. Zion was unbelievable last night. Season high in that play-in game. 40 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, a block. And then in crunch time, down the stretch before he got injured, the defense he was playing on LeBron was vicious, unbelievably good. But it looks like he's going to be out for Friday's play-in elimination game versus the Kings, and he'll be evaluated in the coming weeks, whatever the hell that means. I don't know if you have weeks to deal with this, because they're not going to make a run like that. So,
right,
I mean,
that's the assumption that they would win.
If they're evaluating in the coming weeks, we won't see him again.
It's a huge bummer for every NBA fan, because Zion was amazing last night. And really, after his first few weeks of, you know, drama and weight stuff this year, he was excellent this season. By far the best season of his career. The Pelicans, though, you want to talk about a team in purgatory? Man, their roster is not ready to compete, and it's not really close. CJ McCollum, have you seen his past three playoff performances?
No, are they terrible?
Yikes.
Really bad.
Brandon Ingram disappeared.
No, and that's what I wanted to get to. That was my biggest takeaway from last night. Brandon Ingram didn't play.
Ain't got it.
In closing time.
He ain't got it.
And he wasn't good during like the stretches in the game that he actually played, but his time with the Pelicans feels over. Like, if I'm reading the tea leaves off of him not playing in closing lineups with Zion out of the game, and they're putting in Dyson Daniels and Jose Alvarado's playing this massive offensive role for them.
Because they try.
But, like, Brandon Ingram's done there. There's no other way I can read last night any differently. There's no way that, obviously they don't think highly of him if he's not playing in closing lineups. There's no way he survives this. He'll be somewhere else next season. I do not see him. And maybe that'll clear some things up for them, at least a tad bit.
It'll clear up some money for him, at least.
Yeah, and like it also clears up the fact that it's like, okay, we have these offensive – we have one guy who's incredibly offensively inclined, and then C.J. McCollum is a two. But Zion Williamson, if you believe that he will stay healthy, you just need to build around him and say, Brandon Ingram, you can go where you need to go, figure it out from there.
Do we have any faith that the Pelicans could be
– Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beat the Kings without Zion.
No, none.
I think that's the right take.
None.
Brandon Ingram might come back and have a big game, but if you've just looked at his stats this season, it has been creeping toward this direction kind of all year. And to be quite honest, we saw it up close with Team USA. You and I were like, where is Brandon Ingram? He's disappearing. He's completely disappearing. And that's what he did all season this year.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate. The Pelicans are... They have a lot of issues. Like, Jonas is another year older. Herb Jones is somebody that they need to start focusing on. Zion Williams is somebody that they need to start focusing on.
Trey Murphy.
After that, though, it's like any of them you could do without. C.J. McCollum's going to be a weird decision, too, I think.
Yeah.
Because this is now the third straight season of, hey, man, we need you in a playoff moment. And he's like, nah, I got you.
Well, C.J. McCollum was such a breath of fresh air when they actually acquired him because it was like Devontae Graham. It's a step up from Devontae Graham. But now you're seeing C.J. is built to be a two-guard.
Sure.
He's not built to be facilitating offense the way he has to with the Pelicans, and it's just a little bit of a problem. But, yeah, I don't trust them. I don't trust them at all. But I think if you get rid of Brandon Ingram, find some things within the margins you can do, keep Zion healthy. Zion needs to come into camp, in shape. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be, in the Western Conference playoff picture. But beyond that, they're not a championship team. I'm not looking at a championship team in the next 3 to 5 years. I don't see that at all.
They've got a lot of work to do.
No question about it.
Now, speaking of finding things around the margins, the Luke Kennard question is a real one to ponder for the Grizzlies heading into the offseason. They have until June 28th to pick up his $14.7 million player option, or he may walk for nothing. Luke Kennard is, without question, going to be on this roster next season. Overreaction, not an overreaction.
My biggest problem with the way that's worded is without question. So I'm going to say overreaction. I $14.7 million is steep. And I know like people were trying to point out like the Grayson Allen deal, 4 years, $70 million. Oh, great. Well, Grayson Allen had a historic season, 46.2% from three. And he shot like, 400 attempts this year? Something like that? So like Grayson Allen proved his worth, and especially in that Suns rotation that needs depth and they needed another score. He was basically their third leading scorer because Bradley Beal didn't play enough games. So that's who Grayson Allen was this year. He sort of earned that. Luke Kennard's not on that level. I think 14.7 is an overpay for him for a year, but they have to decide if they're going to take this player option or not. I think if I'm reading the tea leaves at this particular moment, they're trying to find some ways to see what they can do. If he's a part of a larger deal and he gets into that player option, they might explore that. I think if they want to keep him, there's one way to do it. I think really what you're looking at is, hey, as we get into the free agent negotiation period, they're going to have to say, hey, Luke, we want you. We do. And I think it's clear. Like Zach Kleiman says he does potentially want him to be part of the future plans. But I think they're going to approach him and say, hey, we'll give you more years, but I can't pay you $14 million a year. I can give you two for 20. I can give you, three for 30, something like that. But I just think $14.7 million with the second apron of the luxury tax approaching, I just don't know if that's going to be ultimately worth it for this team going into the future when they have to eventually pay Jaren Jackson Jr. and all these different things are coming up. So I thought at first, just considering his style of player, having Desmond Bane and him, two of the best knockdown three-point shooters in the league. It's just like copy and paste. You need to have him next year. But the more I'm reading through it, I have changed my tune on this. I think that it's leaning a certain way right now, and I'm not sure that they'll pick up that player option and bring him back next year.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that you just said. I think that the interest between Luke Kennard and the Grizzlies is probably mutual, but at the end of the day, the Grizzlies have expressed that they don't want to approach that second apron and that money's going to matter this offseason. It's an extremely important offseason for the Memphis Grizzlies, especially with the season that they just went through. And I do think that they would want a guy like Luke Kennard back because we know that three-point shooting right now in the NBA is a must-have. And if you have Luke Kennard and Desmond Bane on your team, that's a pretty damn good place to start for your three-point shooting. But that price is a little steep, and that's why I do think that we could see them renegotiate. That would be great. If it doesn't happen, though, that's where, you know, you have options in the draft and in free agency where you can bring somebody in.
This is what I was thinking about. If the ping pong balls go their direction, right, say they're a top 4 or 5 pick,
mm-hmm.
and you can't talk yourself into taking Donovan Klingon in a top 4 or 5 pick.
Right.
If there's a guy like Reed Sheppard or a guy like a three-point shooter, maybe that could be your replacement, and you go explore the free agent market for a big.
Yeah.
Because I'm certain there's somebody out there that they could go find a free agent or trade market, a lower-paid, big-bodied center to sort of pair with Jaren Jackson Jr. in starting lineups. So I think, you know, as much as we talked about Donovan Klingon and they, you know, almost been talking about it like it's open shut, that's the guy that they need to target. You know, if you end up getting good luck on ping pong ball night, you may just take best player available, not take a big in the draft, and go explore the free agent market, and that would leave you in a better position in the Luke Kennard situation, and that may make Luke Kennard more expendable if you find the type of guy that you're looking for in those top 5 picks. If
totally
you find
agree.
A guy who can just knock down a three ball, and Reed Sheppard's the guy I want to point out most notably, that would be an interesting one.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think the reason you and I have been so on Klingon is just we're kind of expecting the Grizzlies to land around 7 and 8. Like, if that's what happens, then that's where you're going to meet, like, best player available is going to meet need at, like, 7 or 8. But if you end up in the top 5, you have to make a decision. And, you know, I understand the arguments for you need to take the best player available despite the fit. I'm all for that. And if you aren't going to be bringing Luke Kennard back, getting a wing shooter is not the worst idea in the world. The Grizzlies are going to have some flexibility and options within this draft. We talked about it a bit yesterday, but I do think that Brandon Clark's play at the end of this season does help this conversation a little bit. You don't have to go out there and make sure you get a big in this draft no matter what, because Brandon Clark has shown, okay, he can be very effective still at that 4. Jaren's going to have to play some 5 sometimes. I believe that that's going to be their closing lineups. You're really just looking for somebody that can be next to Jaren, play that 5 for 3.5 quarters, and then until that death closing lineup can come in, Isaiah Hartenson's going to be out there. We've heard the Nick Claxton rumors. I'm not a big fan of the Nick Claxton stuff. You know, Drummond's still out there.
Well, and
there
the Nick Claxton stuff feels like the Nets are going to pay him.
I'm going to be honest. I think Nick Claxton's like a 50-cent version of Jaren Jackson Jr. I don't want him. I don't need him. I don't want him. Don't need him. Seen him up close a couple times. He has very little impact on winning. That team stinks.
The problem I've had with the Nick Claxton thing is, like, if you ever, like, watched him in a full game,
he's barely there. You barely notice him.
He can screen, and he's an okay rebounder. He's not like Steven Adams rebounding the ball. I hate to tell you that. Like, he's a decent defensive player. The one thing that really would excite me about a Nick Claxton, Jaren Jackson Jr. Front court,
they're blocking everything.
Like, no one is testing them at the rim. But other than that, like, I don't know if it's the best fit. I really don't. And then it would be a lot of money, and you'd have to you'd get in a bidding war with the Nets because the Nets are seemingly going to pay him. So, yeah.
It's just, I think he's going to cost too much money. Like, he's going to cost too much money, I think, for what the Grizzlies want to do. You can find better, cheaper options.
Question?
He's a good player. I don't think that he is anywhere close to what some people are trying to pretend he is.
Let me bounce this off you. If it goes bad for the Clippers early in these playoffs, Kawhi can't play, whatever it is, and they bow out early, and they just decide, okay, we're probably going to blow it up. What do you think would happen with Zubats?
I would take Zubac.
I would
absolutely take him.
110%. He'd be relatively perfect. 100%.
It is. We didn't really talk about it yesterday because the news broke after our show. It's the most Kawhi thing ever to commit to Team USA without committing to your own team in the playoffs.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. He was the 12th guy, by the way.
That's pretty hilarious.
For those that didn't see that.
Funny that we got reports that he's going to play for Team USA before we know if he's playing for his own team in the playoffs.
But it does add to that. That Team USA team is so stacked.
It's going to be crazy.
It might be a bloodbath for
everybody. Did you see Cowherd today being like, I'm not sure I like this team? You mean the one with Steph, LeBron, and KD, and Booker,
okay,
and Anthony Edwards? You think that, and Joel Embiid?
That's take
and Kawhi
that's,
Leonard.
That's take Olympics at its Sheesh. Finest. That's just he didn't workshop that one well enough. That's rough. What are you talking?
I get you got to fill some time, but yeah, come on, man, yeah. Come on, man.
Don't say things you don't believe. There's no way you believe that. You know, in the end of the day, what are you going to say? They're old. Well, yeah, that's fine. They're still the best players in the NBA. Like. They've accomplished things, especially with Team USA. That's stupid.
Maybe Steph was just, you know, I did see a funny tweet yesterday that was just like, Steve Kerr's just keeping Steph fresh for Team USA. That was his plan.
Steph Curry was Steve Kerr, and he's going to be highlighted. I'll tell you that.
Probably so.
Yeah.
Probably should be.
Yeah.
Probably, Steph Curry, good at basketball.
Yes. That's good.
That's why people tune into the Gabe Kuhn
Show.
That's
great analysis,
stuff
Connor Dunning.
Right there.
That is
why you tune into this show.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Now, we do have a couple more play-in games tonight in the Eastern Conference. Heat versus 76ers and Hawks versus Bulls. That'll be the late game at 8:30. And you can bet on the NBA play-in tournament with a no-sweat same-game parlay from FanDuel. It doesn't matter if you're new to FanDuel or already have an account. You'll get bonus bets back if your same-game parlay doesn't win on any Tuesday night matchup or Wednesday night matchup as well. NBA same-game parlays are the perfect way to combine your bets for a chance to score a bigger payday. However you want to play, just head to FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. To bet the NBA with a no-sweat same-game parlay. It's FanDuel.com/GABEK. Again, GABEK. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA and 92.9 ESPN. You must be 21-plus and present in Tennessee. Minimum three-leg parlay required. Refund issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Max refund $5 unless otherwise specified. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. And if you have a gambling problem, call the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. We have more news on the Tiger basketball out-of-conference schedule. More teams have been added, so we're going to have to tell you what this out-of-conference slate's going to look like. And, you know, spoiler alert, it's loaded. It's absolutely loaded. That's next, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
We have even more non-conference games for Memphis Tiger basketball to talk about. Two today, home and homes. One, Memphis and Mississippi State. I enjoy that one. I very much enjoy that one, home and home. Next season will be at FedEx Forum. The return trip to Starkville will be in 2025, 2026. So this is for a couple years down the road. So it will keep the out-of-conference schedule looking relatively nice. And then also Memphis and Ole Miss played four times. As of late, both teams won both games on their home floor, if I'm not mistaken. So they agreed to a home-and-home FedEx Forum coming up this season. And then the return trip to Oxford will be in 25-26. So if you're keeping track of what this is going to look like next year, San Fran at Chase Center, and I'll get to sort of Joe Lenardi has a way too early bracketology out, and I'll tell you all the teams that are involved. UNLV in Las Vegas, Maui Invitational with this loaded set of teams. Virginia on the road, Clemson on the road, Missouri at home, Mississippi State at home, Ole Miss at home. That's nuts. I mean, they're going to have to get a couple bye games in there, I'm sure. But yeah, they're running out of space to go get those easy wins at the beginning of the season. It's going to be tough. It's going to be really hard. He's going to have to put together a hell of a roster before they get to that out-of-conference schedule. Now, I know that they managed the out-of-conference slate this year really well, and they lost it in conference. I think next year they'll have more of a focus on in conference, but they still are going to need to win some of these games to move up their seed line and potentially get a good resume builder going into the tournament. But that's nuts. I mean, it's ridiculous what they've put together. If you look at Joe Lenardi's early bracketology, I know people will roll their eyes at me. So far, he has San Fran in the tournament. He has Clemson in the tournament, Mizzou in the tournament, which I found a little strange. He had them as an 11 seed, I believe. So I didn't really understand that one, but maybe he's higher on Dennis Gates rebounding after zero wins in the SEC this year. I think that's a little weird. And then he has Mississippi State in the tournament as well. So, and then everybody in the Maui Invitational is in his bracket at this point. There's going to be a chance to play at least six or seven tournament teams in their out-of-conference schedule. That's unbelievable what Penny Hardaway and this athletic department continue to do in setting this team up to be among sort of the national conversation. That's what this does for you. Playing in games like this, ESPN, national TV, playing, you know, teams that are going to be in the tournament, that's what gets you the national recognition, and they understand that, and they keep doing it.
Yeah, so far, Penny and his staff, whether it's on the recruiting trail or NIL trail or transfer, whatever you want to call it, and then with the schedule building, they're doing everything they need to do to set up this team so far for what could be a successful season next year and to try to avoid what happened last season. You know, the out-of-conference schedule looks fantastic right now, and you know, they just got to remember you got to focus on that conference schedule too. As long as they keep that energy for the conference schedule, they should be just fine. But I'm very pleased with all the reports coming out. I like that we're going to have some local games going on. It's going to, you know, up the interest in those, and the trash talking around the city will be fun to have with Mississippi State, Ole Miss, all that stuff. They got to get Ole
Miss.
Ole Miss for sure.
Who's biggest on your wish list though for out of conference opponents going into the future? I have one that I don't.
Tennessee.
Okay, Tennessee. I have one that I know won't happen, unless it's a very nice situation for Arkansas. But Arkansas would be my top of my wish.
That's fair.
Tennessee would be great too, but I
don't understand why there's not a Memphis Tennessee game every year. There needs to be.
Well, we know.
Somebody,
bald fist game,
and then scared.
Then they're trying to play in Bridgestone, and then the Tigers get to Nashville and have COVID. And I think that Tennessee was very annoyed with that. And I don't see that happening either. So Arkansas and Tennessee would be at the top of my wish list, but I just don't see that happening anytime soon. I would love to see Cal come into FedEx Forum as an opposing coach. That would be so damn fun.
It would be hostile.
It would be packed out, and you'd have to put it on a Saturday or a Sunday to get everybody in there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It would be FedEx Forum would not have an empty seat.
No, I'd be there for sure.
100%. Now, on the transfer portal, I want to run this by some folks. There's a guy from VCU who got into the portal today, and I've done my transfer portal wish list before, and you know, PJ Haggerty was at the top of it. It came true. Here's my other one, and I think they'll have some competition if they're going to go after this guy. But there's a guy by the name of Toby Lawal who got into the portal today from VCU. He's 6'8", 200. He's a vicious rebounder. In that game against the Tigers, where they went to OT and the Tigers ultimately won, he had 16-8 off the bench. He averaged 8-6 off the bench. And, again, 6'8", 200. And his last reported, he's a big, his last reported vertical jump, 42.5 inches.
Damn.
Looking at the production and the skill set and the athleticism, I can't think of like a better big for Penny Hardaway. And you could run some vicious small ball lineups because he can rebound relatively well. That would be at the top of my wish list at this point. But I think they're focusing right now on a lot of guys. Devon Barnes from Sam Houston State, Mark Freeman from Morehead State. They're trying to find some guys to come back to the city. Mark Freeman from Southwind and the other guy, Devon Barnes, played for Collierville his senior year. So we'll see how this all shakes out. But there's a lot of opportunity out there for them to take advantage of. There's no question about it.
Yeah, I like the mindset that they have had with going after some of these guys. It seems like they are searching for a certain archetype of player rather than going after the big names. They're trying to find guys in which they think are going to fit within Penny Hardaway's system the best. And it's defensive-minded guys, three-point shooting, high IQ basketball players. And so far, that's what we've seen them doing. And because I think that the lessons learned from last year is that the shiny objects and the, oh, they're going to be really good on offense doesn't necessarily matter if that's not your team's philosophy. If your team's philosophy is built around defense, you got to make sure you're finding those guys. And you've said this a few times, it does feel like they are targeting guys more so in the way that they did 2 years ago with that team with Kendrick Davis and DeAndre Williams than they did last year.
The Keontae Kennedy's, Elijah McCann's moving up and trying to prove themselves. Now, worth mentioning, Devon Barnes was in for a visit earlier this week, and Arturo Dean, the Florida International transfer who has played 2 years, 5'9", but he led the country in steals, 3.35 a game. He will be in for a visit today and tomorrow, I believe. I don't know about him, though. That's an interesting fit. A 5'9 guard who turns the ball over a fair amount, but he does get a lot of steals. kind of Alex Lomax-esque, right? Like, but we know that that could be a glue guy. That could be a glue guy
A-Lo,
if you get him to campus.
Here's what I'll say about A-Lo. He won them a ton of basketball games. You want to talk about Tennessee.
Isn't it wild to see on the back end how much more appreciated he is when you don't have him?
The grass is not always greener on the other side.
It's like you appreciate because
he's a gamer. I always liked A-Lo.
Yeah, there were some games though where you're like, damn.
There were going to be some games with him that you were like, damn.
Well, but it was more than not,
he was affecting winning.
I think largely until Kendrick Davis though, Alex Lomax was square peg into a round hole. You had to make him the you know,
he was being asked to
feature
do a little
guard,
bit too
but
much.
He had to facilitate everything everybody, and that's not really. He wants to be the defensive ace, dirty work guy as a guard, and that's not.
You wanted to be able to smash Tyler Harris and A-Lo together. Like,
yes.
If you could smash them together, you'd be
the
like,
offense and the three-point shooting mixed with the absolute dog and Alex Lomax. Now, on the transfer portal that is open, the transfer portal's open everywhere. Literally, your head spins. And we'll talk about Colorado a little later. They have some guys that, I mean.
DM me.
They're going everywhere. And by the way, the Shiloh Sanders thing is just funny, and we'll talk about it. But Memphis has some guys that have gotten into the portal with the spring transfer portal opening up. Diego Brumfield, I mentioned, was a starter last year at corner. He led the team in pass breakups, but we know that secondary was not very good a year ago. And they brought in a bunch of guys on the transfer portal market and then the high school market the past 2 years to be safeties, DBs for this team. Jay Ducker, the running back, he's gone. Maurice Hampton, he transferred this offseason after playing some baseball, and he's back into the portal. And Matt Zenitz sort of was reporting that he's going to have some – it's kind of jarring to see how these things are worded. Now, he said power four interest. That just blows my mind. Power four is just – I know that's what it is at this point, but it's just hard to see. But I don't know why he would have that type of interest. I know he went to LSU out of high school, but he's been playing baseball. He's got 1 year of eligibility. I don't know who would really take a long shot at him, but we'll see. We'll see. And then a very interesting one and a tough one to see, Jara Anderson. He was a D-tackle last year, and he was very good as a freshman, like really good. True freshman out there. He was a little undersized, but he was on the freshman All-American team. So, like, that is one bigger name that I am a little frustrated by leaving in this spring window opening. But, I heard Ryan talk, and he stepped up to the mic yesterday, and he was just sort of discussing, if we have to bring in 20 transfers during the spring portal, we have failed. And I think there's an understanding now that roster retention is one of the main things you have to focus on in this day and age of college athletics. And I think they've done a good job of that, but there's going to be more names. You just hope they're not those massive names, Rock Taylor, Demir Blankham, those type of names. You don't want those to get in. But anything else, you just sort of take it as it is. Because a lot of guys will get into the portal because they can, and they want more opportunity. It's that simple, and I can't blame them a bit.
Yeah, it's as long as they can keep those big names on the roster and the ones that we're thinking of, the Rock Taylors and Demir Blankham, like that is what matters ultimately. And it's just, is there a position that you're worried about the most that could have some transfers within it? Is it the line? Is it the secondary?
I think the line's pretty well set. The secondary is the only thing I'd pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
You did have a starter leave last year.
Right.
I don't know what his role was this spring. Like that's maybe one of the reasons he left is his role was diminished with all the different DBs they brought in the past two cycles.
They have a lot.
But DB would be the one I'm worried about, right? And that's sort of – when we have questions about this team, you're not worried about linebackers, not worried about D-line at the current moment, not worried about wide receivers, any skill positions, quarterback, not worried about that. It's O-line and secondary. I think the O-line's figuring itself out. I don't think you're going to see a lot of transfers. They've tried to replenish after losing Davion Carter and Jacob Likes and Mikhailan Pounders. But the secondary is the one you have to pay attention to because that was a troubled area last year, and you didn't think it would be a troubled area. You just have to pay attention to.
Remember all last offseason? The defense is going to pace the offense.
Well, it was hilarious. The first few games against those horrible competition, they did. They really did.
Keyword, horrible
competition. Exactly, 100%. 100%. Now, as we get closer to the weekend, I know everybody takes that trip to the liquor store. So if you go to the liquor store, make sure you don't buy that national brand. And the reason I say that is because we have a distillery in this town that does it better, right? I know it's hard to break the habit You've been reaching for that bottle that you've always reached for years. But go get Old Dominic. It's very, very simple. Gin, vodka, toddy, whiskey, bourbon. They have selection on selection. And it's the most fresh, most full spirit you can buy in this city. And it's not a surprise why that's the case, because the distillery is here on the riverfront. It's right here. Of course it's fresh. It doesn't have to go far to get to your local liquor store. It's on 305 South Front Street. They have events all the time that you need to check out. You can go check out their events, products, book a tour and tasting at olddominic.com. And I do want to point you in the direction of Old Dom Spirits. You can ship them. You can ship them just about anywhere in the U.S. of A. They are great to get as a gift. I would suggest the five-year-aged bourbon if you're going to go get one for the bourbon lover in your life. But make sure you can get them as a gift. You can ship them at olddominic.com. And they are the official spirit of the Grizzlies. So when you make it over to FedEx Forum, whether it's a concert or a game, there's two bar locations for Old Dominic in there. Make sure you get a craft cocktail with some Old Dominic, one of the Old Dominic spirits. But Old Dominic Distillery wants me to tell you to come by and say hi. Now, hour two is on the way, and we're going to be loaded up. We have our Memphis Showboats guest at about 5:30. But coming up next, to lead off hour two, it's Jeff Calkins.